Tigers play the Phillies later today, 1:10. Look to take the series against Philadelphia. We're joined by A.J. Hinch this morning. A.J., good morning.
Good morning. Can we make a deal, me and you?
Yeah, sure.
Can you call me or have these shows after Tarek Skubal starts all the time?
We can work on that. Yeah, it's always better to start with that performance, right?
Yeah, it is nice to come on the show after Tarek Skubal does that, and especially against that team. What an awesome performance and a night that got us a chance to win the series today.
Well, we talked about that earlier, AJ, when this was a great opportunity, because the last two starts, while for other pitchers you would say, well, they're fine, they weren't Skubal-like starts. And then he gets an opportunity against one of the best or better lineups. Was this, and against Ranger Suarez as well, were you excited about the opportunity that Tarek Skubal had even going into last night's game?
Sure. No, I love having him on the mound. And it's funny, you know, his last two starts, I got asked about that in the media post-game, and, you know, was anything different or whatever. And two starts ago, he threw six scoreless and then got ambushed for four runs in 11 or 12 pitches against Houston. So it wasn't like he pitched poorly. It was a rough seventh inning. And then Atlanta had a really good plan. And I think, you know, it's like nice to know Tarek Skubal's human. He can have a bad day. He just got beat. So there was, it's much ado about nothing with him. But when he comes out, especially the way that Philadelphia swung the bat the night before against Casey, come out four spot in the first, and you know, they separate with the three-run homer from Harper. And, you know, that to have – you know, Tarek come out and just stop the madness, so to speak, against one of the best pitchers in the league in Ranger Suarez. Cool matchup. Like, I still like the starting pitcher on starting pitcher matchup. When you look at the league, I look at starting pitching matchups still, and I think it's important that you know, we value that as an industry, that it matters when you have a matchup like this.
You mentioned stop the madness. You know, we've talked about frustration, some of the conversations we've had on this show with you. Scott Harris was on the Have a Seat podcast with Benetti and Dickerson, and he said that you guys get into fiery debates after games. Not like angry or anything, but what type of things do you guys get fired up about? Because we don't see that side of things necessarily.
No, we don't let you in the office after games. You're right. We have a great working relationship on just the, we're both very passionate about what we do and what we're trying to build. And we get frustrated just like everybody else with situations in the game. And, you know, all the different scenarios can be pitch selection, can be scenarios in the game that, you know, different defensive plays, offensive plays. Like, we have run the gamut of topics because we're trying to squeeze every ounce of success out of this team. And it, you know, I guess it's important for everybody to know, like, we do ride a little bit of emotional roller coaster on the process of how we're trying to win more games, and it matters. It's not just maybe the stoic look that you see all the time or being under control. Like, we're, you know, a lot of times in these close games, there's a tipping point. It might be, you know, doing something or not doing something, or you know, throwing three fastballs in a row and so it's a good partnership to keep each other sharp on how do we get more wins. We want to keep, you know, pushing in that direction.
How do you manage your frustrations level? Because, like you mentioned, hey, yeah, after the game, in the quiet of your office, you guys can get emotional, you can get you know, animated. But when you go against the Brewers and it's a 10-run outing, and then against Houston you see a 13, and then against Chicago there's an 11, but in between there's a whole lot of ones and zeros that the offense is putting up. How do you manage your frustration level, and how do you communicate that to your team?
Yeah, so I, you know, those are tough, you know, sort of tough highs and tough lows, and over the course of 162, you know, there's a couple things. Number one, the play, I'm not mad at the players whenever I'm frustrated. I'm generally mad at the process or something that we did or didn't do, or you know, we misread a situation, or we our lack of awareness. Like, the why is just as important as the end result for me, because we've got to fix it fast, because the next day we play. So, like, the case in point, I got asked, I think, on media the night before about benching guys, about pulling guys out of the lineup, and Like, that's an emotional reaction of being mad. Now, you have to say why. Why would you do something like that? Or why would you, you know, kind of blow a gasket? And I know everybody likes to see that. And then in that 10-second moment of time, you feel better. But it doesn't fix the process. It doesn't fix, like, the reason behind some of – and we got to fix it quickly because we play the very next day. So I do feel like, you know, there's you can misread a lot of different things as if people don't aren't doing that. We're just not doing it in the front of the camera or in the dugout or trying to embarrass one another to address the things that are impacting wins and losses. I do care about effort. I do care about the process of being prepared. Guys are going to make mistakes. We're not perfect. Those blow up games that you're talking about are never easy, but a lot of times it's a different reaction as a manager than that 2-1 game where maybe if you moved that runner or got a fly ball with a runner on third and less than two outs, that would have changed the complex of that game, if that makes sense.
AJ Hinch talking to us this morning, Tiger manager, and we've talked about this team from every way possible, right? The moves that could have been made before the year or the players and the ups and downs of the season. I wonder with you, how much of it do you look at yourself? How much would you put on your plate in terms of, I don't know, blame or where the team's at or versus where it's not? How much do you put on yourself?
I put all of it. I mean, I'm always looking at myself as trying to squeeze as much as we can. I mean, we're not going to finger point. So, like, I know, like, today's society and the atmosphere is like, you know, behead those that are involved if you're not doing perfectly. But I think it's all important. We all are accountable. Like there's a ton of things that I'm trying to check myself on and see if I'm doing everything that I can. If I expect my players to do that, like why wouldn't I do that? Like that's absurd to point fingers at anybody other than yourself. And then you can start to break down the rest of the team. But that I wouldn't see it any other way.
Do you think you're doing a good job?
Well, of course. I think I'm doing my best. Like, we're all trying to do what kind of, I don't know what kind of question that is.
Like, no, I just mean, like, the evaluation, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, do you have moments where you're like, I don't. Okay.
No, go ahead. Like, I mean, quite honestly, that's kind of a crazy question. We're all trying to do. Are you doing your best on this show?
Some segments are better than others. I'd be honest
with
you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's part of, like, all of us have that feeling. So, I mean, I'm not trying to get
conversational
with you.
I know,
I'm just
AJ,
trying to say, like, if you go to anybody in their job, are you doing a good job? You're doing your best.
Well,
like we're trying to do our best.
Maybe if I ask it a little differently, your fourth season, we look to see signs of progress from players. We look to see signs of progress from the organization. We aren't seeing maybe as much as we wanted. And I wonder, just from your standpoint, do you feel like you've, I don't know, we're going to get back to the same question here, but do you feel like when we look at mistakes in the field and base running blunders and, you know, maybe the lack of development from the position players, does that reflect on you? And you would say, yes, you're the manager, so I think we've asked and answered that, but that's
no,
all I was trying to get
hard,
at.
Right, yeah. We are all doing our part. I mean, listen, we can go at a different time and talk about the progress of players, and, like, I think you're talking about wins.
Sure.
Because if you're talking about progress of players, like, Riley Green's developing into a pretty good player. Wenzel Perez has come up and done very well. Cole Keith has been one of the more productive second basemen in baseball since May. Tarek Skubal's turned into a monster. Like, I'm not going to come on and, like, go through every single player. We need to translate that to wins better, but I think Matt Vierling's doing pretty well. Like, there's progress. I think you're talking about wins, and that's, you know, kind of not necessarily the development of players.
Well, so I'll ask about the development of players. As the head coach, obviously you have a staff. You've got hitting coaches, pitching coaches, there's a support staff, there's a front office staff. How do you view your role in developing these young players? Because this has been a season of development, and Scott Harris has said, we don't want to block young players because we want them to develop. And probably the toughest thing in most of sports is to develop at the major league level as a baseball player. How do you view your role in developing these young guys?
Yeah, so I think the hardest thing is having the patience to allow the development. I think the development is, you know, happens over time, and time is becoming smaller and smaller, the acceptance of time. So, like, when I hear things like, you know, about players who don't get off to a hot start and now we disregard them and want the new one, like, that's no patience in development. Development takes a lot of time. Like, 2 years ago, Tarek Skubal was throwing 100 pitches in 4 and 5 innings, and now we're raving about his performance. Like, that's development that had to take time. Like it doesn't happen overnight. And so obviously we've got a run process of 26 different guys at different stages of their development in order for them to become their optimal best. And we're trying to match that to where everybody is doing positive things for a team win and doing that, you know, 90 plus times to make a playoff run. So my job in this is obviously to check the development of all players, to check the process that we have in place, our game planning. You know, I'm overseeing a lot of different areas. And I'm going to be a good teammate. And so I'm going to take responsibility for a lot of things as the manager. Some things go well, some things don't. It's 162 games, and it's not going to be perfect. And so when the games where we don't do well, of course we stay up late at night trying to figure out how to be better the next day, because it's a grueling schedule. We don't have 7 days in football to wait, or 4 days in basketball or hockey to wait. Like, we've got to reset and get to the next day, and things aren't going to change overnight. So it's we're taking steps in a positive direction. There's a lot better things going on than you're giving credit. But it needs to translate to more wins, and that's what the fans deserve. And that's ultimately what is going to win over fans, or win over, whatever the game plan that happens that night, is whether you win or not.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I think one thing we would both agree on, Riley Green, you've mentioned him. He is a positive storyline. I would argue performing like an all-star. I don't know if he'll get in with the fan vote, but if you could speak to, you know, maybe trying to get more fan votes for him, or what you're seeing with him, or whether you view him in that same way as a guy who has achieved that all-star caliber of play.
Yeah, he should be an all-star. If you look at what his performances stacked up against other outfielders and big name outfielders that everybody recognizes, he's outperforming them in a lot of areas and keeping up with, you know, the Juan Sotos of the world and guys in the American League who, you know, are deemed shoe-ins for the All-Star game. Riley Green's doing it. So, you know, I think sometimes, you know, the last few years, I think that the generally the league has waited for, the league, in the league, we've had the vote goes and Tigers don't get voted in, and then they pick somebody, right? Last year it was Michael Lorenzen. It was Gregory Soto a few years ago. They just kind of pick their one guy and go. And I think this year we should stand up as a community and get Riley Green in the game. You know, obviously they're going to pick Tarik Skubal. They should pick Jack Flaherty, and that's three Tigers. And there's probably going to be multiple this year for the first time, certainly in my tenure. So, Riley has done his part playing on the field. He's a tremendous guy to look up to for young people. He does everything right on and off the field and has the performance to match. So if we're in the, you know, sort of spirit of comparing players, take a look at the big ones. You have Aaron Judge, you have Juan Soto, you have Kyle Tucker, who's been out for most of the last month or so. Riley Green's name is right there with the best outfielders in baseball.
You guys are about to take off on a 10-day road trip, and it's going to be a tough one. How important would it be for you guys, and I know you've talked about this, 162, there's a lot of momentum shifts, but to get a series win against the Phillies, that's got to mean something. How important would that be to be able to get that series win, but also knowing that you're leaving for a 10-day road trip?
Yeah, no, I mean, not so much just because we're leaving, but just, you know, where we're at on the calendar, you start getting – we're getting closer and closer to July. So I think, you know, it does magnify the wins and losses a little bit. There's a lot of attention on what's ahead. You know, we see Cleveland is playing tremendous baseball. I think their wins are in the 50s. You see Minnesota, who is on this road trip. We play them for three games. Like, those, you know, we do pay attention to the long run of playing these games, you know, sort of the cliche, one at a time. It's magnified a little bit more because, like, to make a push, you got to put some wins together. You know, when you look at teams around the league that I was driving in and listening to different things last night on my app, and I was like, here come the Tampa Bay Rays. Houston Astros have played really well the last week. There are runs that need to happen to boost the momentum in the right direction, and this is one of them. It's an important road trip. There's no way around it, and it starts today with packing our bags and getting a home game, you know, with against arguably one of the best teams in baseball, and then we kickstart a 10-day road trip. When we come back, it's going to be July, and there's going to be a lot more known about this team.
Tiger manager AJ Hinch checking in a couple weeks, maybe after a Skubal start. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. Anytime after a Skubal start.
Oh, real quick, who is today's starter?
We're going to open Tyler Holton, and then Cater Montero is going to come in at some point, kind of as that bulk reliever. I'm anticipating, I mean, maybe if they want to give Schwarber or Harper a day off, cool, no problem. we're going to open with Holton, and then we'll get Cater in there at some point. It's going to be essentially a bullpen game with Montero being the guy who eats up most of the innings.
AJ, good stuff. We'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
It's 97.1.